Anyway, my name is Elijah Dean, and this is a truck apostolic Sabbatarian congregation. I was out the South Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is November the 11th, 2023. Oh, it is the 28th day of Bull, 2027. We will start our first service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, Open My Eyes That I May See. Open my eyes that I may see glimpses of truth thou hast for me. Place in my hands a wonderful key that shall unclasp and set me free. Solidly now I wait for thee, ready my young I will to see. Open my eyes, illumine me, Spirit of divine. Open my eyes that I may hear visions of truth that send us clear. Open my ears that I may hear voices of the truth thou sendest clear. And while the wave notes fall on my ear, everything false will disappear. Silently now I wait for thee, ready my love, I will to see. Open my eyes, illumine me, Spirit divine. Open my mouth and let me bear, give me the warmth truth everywhere. Open my heart and let me prepare the with thy children thus to share. Solidly now I wait for thee, ready my love I will to see. Open my heart, illumine me, the White House recruited by Vicki Hall of 1951. We're going to start with page one. It says, A Post for Every Ministerial Graduate by Vicki Hall. He called himself Jezreel, meaning the Master Prophet. First sibling of Hosea. This tract was published back in 1951. It says, never did the clouds of war, so strange and so dark, hang in an angry thunderhead over the world, and never did the world see itself as it does today. Everywhere in the government, in the industry, in the halls of learning, in the churches, in the homes, on the streets, in every walk of life, the question uppermost is, whither bound mankind? From the preeminent scientific and journalistic spokesman come such representative utterances as these. What is the story of man? It is that man died, man survived. Now men are measurably nearer the most terrible of all the climaxes they have brought upon themselves and their long history of the struggle. If the climax comes, it will change life and change the world, but it will not end life. It will not destroy the world. And this utmost climax, or perhaps in its prospect, men may at last find the secret of the peace and the way to live without the destruction. That is a hope, for the certainty is that man will be on the earth making a world happen, life, happen, life, October the 3rd, 1949. So I guess Pete Heller meant to say that this was published from the Life magazine of October the 3rd, 1949, page 22. For the Einstein, everybody knows who he was. He's the Jew that split the atom and created the atom bomb. Agrees that other nations can rediscover our secret processes by themselves, that no military defense can be expected, and preparedness is futile, that if another war breaks out, atom bombs will surely destroy civilization. It is important, he went on to say, to enlighten the public opinion on the real situation about the bomb. Only the prevention of war by action on an international scale, which will make preparation for war unnecessary and even impossible, can save us from its consequences. Newsweek, March the 10th, 1947. History in large areas of the world has been rolled back. Fanaticism has replaced reason. Terror, compromise, hate, friendship, science, education, and philosophy, for the vehicles as the vehicles of the progress for the Western man, have been perverted, distorted, and retooled into the weapons against civilization. That's written to John Edgar Hoover in a report sent out by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He was the head of the FBI. For the First World War was a decided shock for the earlier period of the optimism. That was in 1917. Today, the shock is almost incredibly greater. Insecurity and strife are so general that the prevailing attitude is one of the anxious and pessimistic uncertainty. John Dewey, Reconstruction and Philosophy, page 8. There is only too much reason to fear that the Western civilization, if not the whole world, is likely in the near future to go through a period of immense sorrow and suffering and pain. That was written by Bertrand Russell on the subject, If We Are to Survive This Dark Time. That was in the New York the Times Magazine, 1950, November. We have now arrived at the ultimate stage in history. What is ultimately required of us is required of us now. It is very late. Perhaps nothing can save us but the handwriting on the wall is plain enough. It says unto the people of the earth, unite or die. That is written by Dr. Robert M. Hutchins. Everyone is agreed that an atomic war is world a suicide, that no one can win. No scientist of the repute doubts the fact that every country with an industrial capacity will have the atom bomb in 5 years. We therefore have just 5 years to build for peace. Dr. Robert M. Hutchins, Chancellor of Chicago University and Chicago, 1946. There can be no doubt about the world crisis. We are living at one of those turning points of history which offers two roads, one of which leads to death and the other to life. The fact is that the H-bomb represents mankind's final suicide triumph by the unlocking of the inmost secrets of the nature for the purposes of the total destruction, for it brings into the absolute focus of the failure of a materialistic civilization which has sought to organize its life apart from the Yahweh. G. Ashton Oldham, formerly Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Albany, on the world crisis and the future in the Bulletin of the Church Peace Union for June. People are discovering a frightful queerness has come into life. Even unobservant people are betrayed by the fits and starts. A certain wonder, a shrinking fugitive sense that something is happening so that life will never quite be the same. Spread out and examine the pattern of the events and you will find yourself face to face with a new scheme of being hitherto unimaginable by the human mind. Values are convinced there is no way out around through the impasse. It's the end. H.G. Wells, Los Angeles, 1945. In a thoughtfully considered opinion of his eminent on the scene observers, this generation is at the zero hour of civilization. Whether you realize it or not, the day of the doom is shortening its shadow, and we are face to face with the most momentous issues ever to confront a generation of men. Atomic warheads, lethal rockets, poison, gas, bacterial bombs, super submarines boring through the mighty deeps, and supersonic aircraft stabbing through the space above. What mean these and other dread devices of the destruction? What do these signs of the times portend for the church and for all the world? Had the question flung itself at any generation in the days of the Yahweh's ancient prophet, then beyond doubt they would have answered. As the church lives and as it is certain that Yahweh lives, it would be impossible that he leave his people in darkness concerning the signs of their times, and their answer must certainly be our answer too. Moreover, it is a self-evident fact that if we want to know Yahweh, will enable us to know the true meaning of these unprecedentedly destructive things. From the outset, this much is clearly manifest. If the super bombs, super bombers, and super all import nothing else, they without question threaten civilization. A faint idea of the devastating and demoralizing consequences of their use is to be gained from the scene of the aerial destruction depicted on the cover page. Well, that's enough of that. Let's go now. Let's continue on reading page 7. A manifest, too, is the certainty that heaven hath permitted these instruments of the destruction to come in order to rouse Christendom, ministry, and laity alike unto a concerted, enlightened, all-out action as the Yahweh leads ahead for the saving of man from himself and from the devil. For the Christianity failing this task and leaving the world for the saving of itself as best it can, the enemy will ere long wipe out not only the knowledge of Yahweh and of salvation, but also civilization itself. Indeed, every open-eyed observer can distinctly see that while heaven and earth wearily wait upon the Christians for the taking of the offensive against all unrighteousness, for the power of the evil is exerting an utterly sinister influence through the Christless men and women, such as bear the red torch of the communism. Grim, indeed, is the picture, and the stark peril of it hurls this challenge at the Christendom as a whole. What shall we do about it? Close our eyes tight to it, or arise in the face of it, and be the Noahs, Gideons, Davids, Elijahs, Daniels, or Luthers, and all such with the faith to do something about it while the light still shines and while opportunity still remains us? Will we lay well to heart the tragic truth that the sin of the world's impenitent lies at the door of the Seventh-day Adventist Church? Great Controversy 389, Ellen G. White. Will we all accept the supreme annunciation? Glory unto Yahweh in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. Luke 2:14. As the supreme trust and duty of the Seventh-day Adventist Church more than of the state, our country, and the whole world needs the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and Yahweh is waiting for her members, both laity and ministers, to arise, shine, Isaiah 60:1, and this is our commission also today, is Isaiah 60:1. We've had this several times already. Every Christian who truly knows that the gospel, now I'm going to add the true meaning of the gospel, is the teaching or the preaching of the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, as found in Hebrews 10, the whole chapter, is the power of Yahweh unto salvation. Knows that if the masses were converted into Yahshua, could not be any aggressive communistic or other totalitarian power in the world, and therefore no such threat as militant communism now presents unto civilization. And every Christian also knows that there is no power on earth other than the sword of the Spirit that can cut off the head of the Goliath of the day. What pity then, and what recreancy to trust, should the Adventist Church not immediately lift from the shoulders of the state her own neglected part, which is the greater part of the burden of the peacemaking, but continue to leave government to bear the whole load and to do the best it can without the divine enlightenment and without the power that only the Adventist Church can impart. And virtually pushing the Adventist Church out of all communist-dominated countries, the enemy has already stolen a long and victorious march on her and is now fiercely fighting to extend his victory for the final triumph and the pushing her from the very face of the earth. But there is yet hope if only she will be in courageous loyalty, respond unto the divine command, now ringing forth unto every defender of the faith. Arise, shine, for thy light is coming, the glory of the Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Yahweh, the sun now, for the Yahshua the sun shall rise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. That's the house of David, that is the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, Yahshua sent upon the throne of David here. And the Gentiles shall come unto thy light, and kings unto the brightness of thy rising. Isaiah 60, verse 1 to 3. This is who we are. We are the ones that are to rise with the present truth, and we have the latest present truth about this Righteous by Faith book written by Wagner, E.J. Wagner, back in of 1888-1890, he wrote it after that. We got the book now, Righteous by Faith again, revisited. Okay. And the power of Christ rule or run, war-bent and hell-bent, self-destructive course of mankind, and the anger and the angry and catastrophic unheaval an outbreaking of the elements of nature and in the cumulative fulfillment of the fast unfolding prophecies in the Word of Yahweh, the signs of the times thunder that warn appeal that we arise in the Yahweh's light and make haste for the rescuing of his people from the ills that threaten to devastate the world. If such is not the church's, the Adventist church's great mission and duty at this crisis hour, what need then do the Yahweh and the world have of her? But what can the Adventist church do unless her members, both lay and clerical, arise together as one man and further all into the conflict? Well, knowing as we do the answer unto these urgent questions, what excuse will we have if we do not now arouse ourselves and all saints in the Christendom along with us to do what the gospel commands, and that is the presenting of the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews chapter 10, Hebrews chapter 12, and so forth, commands us to do, regardless how dramatic and impressive any demonstration the church, the Adventist church may put on. It is no secret that even if she is not pushed out of any place or country, still at her present pace of preaching the gospel of the kingdom, which is the teaching of the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10, a temporal millennium will not suffice her in which to warn the world, finish the work, and bring the kingdom in, and every enlightened mind knows this to be the inevitable truth. just look at the brute predatory forces loose and lurking everywhere and causing the whole earth to erupt with the violence, tumult, and terror. So that word terror, we have terror today more than anything in the world. Very, very, they are making men's hearts to fail them for the fear and for the election after those things which are coming on the earth. Luke 21:26. Will not all Christians everywhere be aroused by these things for the putting on the whole armor of the Yahweh and for the taking of the sword of the Spirit, Ephesians 6:11-17, while following the Yahshua as he leads ahead? If not, then certain it is that the church, the Adventist church and the world as well, are hopelessly doomed. To be sure, though, the few who do arouse for the making of the total surrender that our demands, Yahweh will save from the conflagration to come. How, though, shall he deliver anyone who fails to heed the signs of the time? For the thunderings of the dread drums of the doom day, now flashing in our eyes and rumbling in our ear, with a warning more awful than the flaming thunders of the Sinai, no, he could no more deliver such spiritually blind, deaf, and dumb incurables than he could have delivered the antediluvians who failed to go into Noah's Ark. And now, what do the flying saucers add to the already grim picture, whether they are earth-produced mechanism or celestial, interplanetary spaceships? Well, they paint still the grimmer picture for the sinner. Thank the incredulous. Another startled at the thought of the heavens having flying saucers, but why? If Yahweh has given man knowledge for the development of the aerial mechanism, no one can reasonably suppose that heaven does not have incomparably superior ones. Let us not forget what covered a whole mountain in Elisha's day, down in 2 Kings 6:17. To be sure, Elisha called them chariots, but if they were not flying saucers of any type, of some type, how did they come to the earth? It matters not what one calls them, it's what they are and what they do that counts. Be they what they may, however, the signs round about us unmistakably warn that the thick black clouds the globe around are consolidating for the pouring down upon a shelterless world the most horrific storm since time began. Unto all who have an ear to hear and an eye to see, the signs of the time reveal that we are fast coming face to face with the time of the trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1. A clear grasp of the terrible potential of the weapon now available can leave no doubt of the global peril and the picture. Every one of us knows that if the flying saucers are secret military weapons of the United States, then other nations besides ourselves will soon have them too, if they do not have them already. If so, what then can they be designed for but to snuff out the lies, even the lies of the elect, if possible? And if the flying saucers are indeed the Yahshua's, then if the flying saucers I am indeed the Yahweh is the Father, then what else are they come but to deliver everyone whose name is found written in the book, Daniel 12:1. And to slay those who oppress them, Isaiah 66:16. Or if perchance none of the heavens are yet come, still nothing is more certain than that the day hastens greatly when they will come. What is of first and the supreme importance unto each, however, is to know for surety that his name is written in a book, to have this most blessed assurance. One must first know what will keep one's name out of the book and what will put it in. One of the many things that will keep one's name out of the book of the Yahweh is that's the book of the Lamb, the Yahshua's son, is one's turning a deaf ear to the Yahshua's warning that he who puts his hand to the plow then looks back, he who starts in the gospel work then turns away from it is not fit for the kingdom. Luke 9:62. For the fact is that all who have graduated from the ministerial colleges have already put their hand to the plow. Will they now turn back? We devoutly hope not. Unto us Seventh-day Adventists, in particular, the meaning of what we see around us should be window clear, making manifest that the time has now come for every church member to engage in the proclaiming of the three angels' messages. There are, moreover, thousands of the pastoral posts now waiting to be filled by both graduates and undergraduates of the Seventh-day Adventist ministerial colleges, so let no one with such qualification any longer be found either standing idle or engaging in the secular occupation while the Yahshua's work languishes and waits. At this very hour, millions without hope are wasting and withering away, perishing in the fields of sin and on the fields of battle, because no one has won them unto Yahshua with the everlasting gospel, and that is, you know, the blood of the everlasting covenant, that's the gospel, Hebrews 10, who will go for them, who has the vision, the heart, and the will to go out in the rescue of the humanity, for the Yahshua, for all of the college graduates, undergraduates, and Bible workers, who have the ability and the will to equip themselves for the work, both the opportunity for the service and the means for the upkeep and traveling expenses are ready and waiting. Hence there are no grounds for an I pray they have me excused. Luke 14:18. Here be all of us calling that Seventh-day Adventist ministerial students to come and join the Shepherd's Rod, because B.T. Hoff is going to furnish them with lodging and expenses and so forth to be able to take the everlasting gospel to the world. Back there in 1951, inspiration appeal, arise and shine is to every soul. Will you not respond, brethren? Will you not earnestly pray for yourself and for other laborers to help gather in the precious golden grain, or will you fail in this unforgiving responsibility and forfeit this most lofty privilege? for the issue is of the greatest gravity, for Yahshua foreknew, actually he foreknew it would be, and in the supreme concern, he projected it in the crowning lesson of his parable of the vineyard. Now that time has come to the last parabolical hour, that's the 12th hour, he said the 11th parabolic hour was that hour, and he said that struck in 1930 at the beginning of his rod, a message. It didn't strike until 2002. He has set the parable ablaze with the light to be progressive as the truth itself is. Let us look deeper into the parable now while the light of Yahweh is shining on it. For the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning for the hiring of laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour, and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Again he went, and about the sixth and ninth hour, the sixth hour was William Miller, 1833, and the ninth hour was Ellen G. White, the Seventh Day Adventist, 1844, and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, and that was in 2002, it was Kermit, Texas, when we started to close out the judgment of the dead and started judgment of the living, it's the Passover 2002 with Brother Johnson as the head prophet of the Mount Gilead Center there in Kermit, Texas. Third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Why stand ye here all the day idle? Now he's talking to us that was working from 1970 to 2003 at Kermit, Texas. Those that was working as laborers for the church, Why stand you here all the day idle? And they say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. Matthew 20, verse 1-7. I remember one day after church was over in Kermit, Texas, Brother Johnson and I was the only two left in the church talking about world events. And he said, If I had the money, I'd send you and Alan DeLong out into the harvest field, he said. If I had the money. Well, the truth is, he had the money. He had enough money to get started with, but he just, for some reason, said, If I had the money, I'd put y'all out in the harvest field. But he didn't have the money, so he couldn't go to the harvest field. Well, he told a lie, because he did have the money. How can we know for certainty in which hour we find ourselves, and if our own call to service has come? We can know only by the establishing of the time in which the last parabolic hour expires. And that's that parabolic hour that we're in, the 12th parabolic hour. And to do this, we must first establish the time of the first call for the servant, then in turn the time of each successive call, culminating with the last, first, though pursuant unto this end, we must bring into the focus the parable's significant points. Number one, the householder, as every Bible student knows, is, I'm gonna put the right name there, the son, Yahshua himself. And number two, the laborers are his servants. Well, this proved out when Yahshua came the first time. And number three, the labor, the penny, is the reward a day. Number four, his vineyard is the place where they are to labor. And number five, the day is parabolical, representing a period of the time which is illuminated by some great light. Number six, the period of the labor is both preceded and succeeded by a night, else there could be no early and no late part of the day. Number seven, the householder hires laborers at the five different times. Number eight, there are 4 3-hour periods. Number nine, in each of the first three periods, only one group is hired. Number ten, in the fourth and last period of 3 hours, two groups are hired. And that is your fourth and fifth group found in Matthew 20, verse 5, for the fourth group at the ninth hour, and the fifth group, Matthew 20, verse 6, for those called at the 11th hour. And number 11, the agreement for a penny a day is made only with the first group. Number 12, the other groups are to receive whatsoever is right. And number 13, at the day's end, all are given the same pay, a penny, even though the last worked only 1 hour. Number 14, the first were paid last, and the last was paid first. Now, to find out in which hour we are told, go ye, also, we must hear at the outset of this go to work study, determine where in the time the parable begins and where it ends. For the gaining of this vital knowledge is simply to reckon with the sequentially amplifying fact that the parabolical night which preceded the parabolical day must necessarily be the period before the spiritual light of the world, the Bible, came up, before the light of the Scriptures, for the written word of Yahweh began to shine forth into the hearts of men. For back there, it must be remembered that the will of Yahweh was transmitted not by the Bible, but orally from father to son, just as the light of the sun at night is transmitted onto the earth by the moon rather than directly to this by the sun itself. For this reason, it has come to be regarded as a time of the oral tradition. But the day of the labor obviously represents the period in which the light of the world, the Bible itself, lightens man's path. Thus it is that in its parable, the Master, the Yeshua of the vineyard, regards the Old and the New Testament dispensation as the only day period of all the probationary time in which he goes to the marketplace at five consecutive times to hire servants to work in his vineyard. Finally, the night following the day can only represent the period after the gospel work is finished, after the probation for man's salvation is closed. Then, as the light of the world, the word of Yahweh sinks beyond the horizon of the day, darkness covers the earth and gross darkness the people, Isaiah 60 verse 2. It is a time which finds the destiny of every being forever fixed, then follows the Yahshua's irrevocable finality. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still, and he which is filthy, let him be filthy still, and he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still. Revelation 22:1 or 22:11. It is the time when men shall run to and fro for the seeking of the word of Yahweh and shall not find it. Amos 8:12. For the time when the unmindful of the master's call and the impenitent of the sin realize and cry out in a frenzy and agonized despair. The harvest is past and the summer is ended and we are not saved. Jeremiah 8:20. For the truth has now become clear that the parable divides the time of the salvation into two equal parts of the 12 symbolical hours. See, Rich Heller calls it 12 symbolical hours. But he taught only 11 symbolical hours. And everybody has succeeded him that had the office of the prophet only taught 11 symbolical hours. That's the reason why they all ended up not finishing the work. Symbolical hours. For the period before the Bible, the night, and the period during the Bible, the day. Each one of them has 12 parabolic hours. Lending additional force to the fact that the parable thus divides time, just for the Yahshua declares, are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. John 11:9. Proceeding now, we come to another point of the special significance. For the first four groups were heard at the consecutive interval, three parabolical hours apart. Whereas the fifth, and that's the group we are, House of David, Tribe of Judah, that's who we are since 2002 at the Passover. We started the Judgment of the Living with this fifth group. The last group, and we're the last group, the one hired at the end of the 11th parabolic hour, which ended at Passover 2002 in Trumbull, Texas, came only 2 instead of 3 hours later than the fourth group. And thus only 1 parabolic hour before the day's end, shortly before the probation closes. This 2-hour period from the 9th hour, 1844, that's when the 9th hour actually came to its end. I started the 10th parabolic hour. Until the 11th hour is a singularity which comes as a climatic exception unto the master pattern of the sequential and regular 3-hour intervals between calls. It obviously reveals that the last call comes unexpectedly and surprisingly within the period of the 9th hour group. And Brother Sylvester Johnson, he was the prophet to the third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist, that was called Gilead Center, at Kermit, Texas, and the Gilead Center closed out in 2002-2003. Closing out the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and as I said before, Brother Johnson was the last group to work for the 9th-hour call. He was the last of the 9th-hour call laborers to work in the vineyard for the Seventh-day Adventist. And he worked in the 11th parabolic hour, whereas the Adventists before him, V.T. Holliff, and Ellen G. White, they worked in the 10th parabolic hour. The 10th parabolic hour ended in 1970, and Brother Johnson took up his work in 1970, starting the 11th parabolic hour, and the 11th parabolic hour ended at the Passover 2002, which term it takes you. So it says, the 9th hour group, hence there are only 2 parabolic hours for the one group, and only 1 parabolical hour for the other group. To determine the identity of the laborers participating in each of the five different calls, we necessarily begin our quest with the servants of the first call. We have already seen that it is the Bible, as the spiritual law of the world, that makes the parabolical day. We all know, moreover, that the Bible arrived with the Exodus movement, with Moses coming out of Egypt with the children of Israel in 1500 B.C., 1500 years before the cross. Also, that since since the arrival of the Yeshua never bargained, as it were, with another people, and that they were the only ones to whom he ever committed the ceremonial covenants and all their rewards and promises. Inescapably, therefore, the first group of the parable, those who went to labor early in the morning at the rising of the spiritual light, the Bible, and with whom the bargain was made to receive a penny a day, were the ancient Israel as they were going out of Egypt. The time, which was early in the parabolical day, and the concord with the spirit of the prophecy declared. For the Jews had been first called into the Yahshua's vineyard. That's Ellen G. White's comment on Christ Object Lessons, page 400. At that early hour, as Yahweh began to indict the scriptures as the light that lightens the earth of men, the hearts of men, began to rise, he remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded unto a thousand generations, which covenant he made with Abraham, and his oath unto Isaac, and continued the same unto Jacob for a law, and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. Now today that would interpret that Jacob would be the house of David. He came on the scene in 2002 at the Passover, and the house of Israel would be the 144,000 that joins him. The purified first harvest of the Adventist church. He would be the Israel. Jacob is one thing and Israel is another. In other words, when Jacob wrestled with the angel all night back in the tent, when he overcame, the angel says, your name is no longer Jacob, it is now Israel, because you have prevailed with heaven and you have won out. So now you're called Israel. Having thus, by the first call for the servants solidly, established the time in which the parabolical go-to-work calls started, we are now to ascertain the call time and work period of the servants of the second call. For the second group, those sent at the third parabolical hour must necessarily be the ones who were called to their work next, and they were, as the earlier apostolics significantly enough, those of the 12 apostles, too. Yeshua was crucified at the third hour of the day, Mark 15:25. And likewise, Pentecost came at the third hour of the day, Acts 2:15. Another point of significance of which we should take note is the fact that the messages borne by these first two groups, by the ancient Israel and by the early apostolics, were not of a reformatory nature. They were not old, forgotten truth in the process of the revival and reformation. Rather, each was a new revelation, meet in the due season. present truth, have specially adapted fully for the meeting of the needs of the people and their respective times. For the former group were inspired, then commissioned to teach and practice the truth of the salvation as embodied in the ceremonial system of the animal sacrifices. The latter group were inspired and commissioned for the teaching and practicing of the same immutable truth in their advanced life, and that is through the blood of Yahshua instead of the animal. Advanced from the typical to the antitypical representation, from the ministration in the earthly tabernacle of the sacrifice of the animals, unto the ministration and the heavenly one of Yahshua being the sacrifice. That's found in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18 through 24. That is, from the sacrifice of a lamb of the flock unto the sacrifice of Yahshua himself as the Lamb of the Yahweh. Thus the latter group taught the old truths in a new and original light, in the light of the gospel, or the teaching of the plan of the salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua that was crucified for the remission of sin, resurrected in the triumph over sin and death, and ascended for the making atonement and reconciliation for the penitent sinner, not in an earthly but in a heavenly tabernacle. Since the message of the first two groups, the one carried by the Exodus movement and the other carried by the apostolics at the third hour, were each in their respective time fresh from the glory, that fact logically establishes itself as a divine precedent and pattern for all the messages of the parable. Accordingly, each of the three remaining groups must likewise be entrusted with a message of the new and distinctive revelation of the meat in due season, truth adapted especially and fully for the meeting of the needs of Yahweh's people at the time and then present. Therefore, we need only to trace down through the annals of the church history the unfolding of the scroll till we come upon a newly and originally revealed and proclaimed truth subsequent unto the message of the first advent of Yahshua. It must point out the servants of the third call for the Protestant Reformation being purely an endeavor to restore old downtrodden truth and not to reveal new advanced ones, had no new message of its own. Nothing that had not already been taught in the times past. It therefore follows that the third group and message must be sought during the years following the Reformation. Okay, for the only revelation of the new prophetic truth subsequent to the Reformation is the announcement of the year in which was to begin the work of the cleansing of the sanctuary, primarily in behalf of the dead, based on the Daniel 8:14. But not then fully understood, as its announcement was made by the First Day Adventists, that's the Millerite movement from 1833 to 1844, it necessarily follows that they were the third group of the servants with a new and distinctive message, and as is well known, they started proclaiming it in the year of 1833, announcing that the cleansing of the sanctuary was to commence in the year of 1844. Thus, in 1833, the clock of the parabolic time struck the hour of 6, and in 1844 it struck the hour of 9. for the statement. Again, he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise. And speaking of the two called, not singly, as in the cases of the two preceding calls, but conjointly shows that the sixth hour message and the servants were to be closely related to and associated with the message and with the servants of the fourth call. So it was that the sixth hour group and message, that of the first day Adventist, the Millerite movement, 1833, and the ninth hour group, that is the Helen G., the fourth group, Helen G. White, 1844, and message that of the Seventh day Adventist, fused into one because the message of the former was in itself divinely designed to bring the message of the latter to light. Moreover, as soon as the terminus of the prophetic 2300 days, Daniel 8:14, was reached in October of 1844, just then, Daniel 8:14, Daniel 7:9-10, Daniel 12:10-12, along with the Revelation 14:6-7, the first angel's message and its primary phase were first proclaimed by the Seventh-day Adventists, saying with a loud voice, "Fear Yahweh and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment has come." That was the judgment of the dead. First phase of the two judgment period. Judgment of the living came in 2002. And they worship Him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of water. Revelation 14:7. This brings the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call on us number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with the song. Till the storm passes by.
In the dark of the midnight, have a hope to hit my face. For the storm's a hell above me, and there's no hiding place. The crash of the thunder, precious Lord, hear my cry, keep me safe till the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Many times Satan whispered, there's no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there's no hope by and by. But I know Thou art with me, and tomorrow I'll rise, where the storm never darkens the sky. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds are low forever from the sky. Hold me fast and let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storms come no more, let me stand in Thy presence on the bright, peaceful shore, in the land where the tempest never comes. Yahweh dwell with me when the storm passes by. till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds drop forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by.